Thank you very much, everybody, for being here on the last day of the conference, first session in the morning. Before I start my presentation, I want to get a sense, since I'm doing the results of a cost-effectiveness analysis, a sense of the familiarity that you all have with cost-effectiveness. Is there anybody in here who is an expert in cost-effectiveness, meaning you've carried out at least one analysis? Yes, got one person. Great. Anybody who's read a cost-effectiveness study in the past? Okay, excellent. And then are any of you practitioners who are out there delivering interventions in the field? And as well. Okay, great. That helps me a lot. So to start the presentation, I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests that are relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months. The agenda of this presentation is to, I'm going to talk a little bit about the issue, why this cost-effectiveness study was carried out, the objective of the study, a little bit about the intervention, because I was told folks would be really interested in that, the data and methods that we used, our cost-effectiveness study results, and a little bit of discussion about them. So the issue itself, as everybody in this room, I am sure, is quite aware, is that improving physical activity and healthy eating behaviors can lower the risk of overweight, of becoming overweight and diabetes. And there are a lot of community-based interventions that are out there to target those risk factors, but few have been able to demonstrate long-term sustained outcomes, particularly in low socioeconomic status populations. And fewer still, have been assessed for their cost effectiveness. And that leads to the question of why is it important to understand what the cost effectiveness of the study is. And we like to think of cost effectiveness as a way to determine between, with limited resources and competing interventions for those resources, what really is the best way to buy health. So what's going to get the desired outcome most efficiently. So the study objective for this particular study was to evaluate the cost effectiveness of a community-based, culturally relevant health education program called Beyond Sabor, and Sabor means taste, flavor, in a low SES, largely Mexican-American adult population on the South Texas border in the lower Rio Grande Valley. And the outcome that we used to carry out the cost effectiveness was percent weight loss between baseline and follow-up, which was over a 9 to 10 month period. So the intervention itself, it was a 12-week program, and the overall goal was to reduce risk factors for diabetes and obesity and overweight. And there were six aims that really fell under the two broad aims of improving healthy eating behaviors as well as increasing physical activity in that population. It was carried out over 16 community-based sites, churches, community health centers. And the target population, that area of Texas is between, depending upon the county, 95 to 98% Latino, mostly Mexican origin. So it was Latino adults who were at risk of or currently were overweight or obese. So we actually did have some normal weight participants in the study, about 15%. And there were, the intervention itself involved weekly classes that met for 2 hours at a time. And they were all broken up into three components. There was a session, a portion of the session would be on risk education, so teaching with some discussion. And then, you know, Sabor, the idea was to teach people how to modify traditional, typical meals that were eaten down on the border so that they were still flavorful and people wanted to eat them, but so that it improved the nutritional content. And then the classes would end with about 40 minutes of group physical activity, which could be salsa dancing, group walks, very well received. And then after the 12-week intervention ended, there were monthly follow-up cues to action, postcards, and newsletters that were sent out to participants. Data was collected at three time points at baseline, end of intervention, so at 12 weeks, and then 6 months later, there was a follow-up data collected. At all points, we collected physiologic data, including there were blood tests, blood was drawn so that we were able to get glucose levels, triglycerides, cholesterol, that sort of thing, as well as weight and height, a lot of demographic information. And then we did a 24-hour food and activity recall at each point. And for the food recall, we used sample size containers to improve the accuracy of the recollection. So people could point to that was about the quantity that I drank or ate of certain foods and beverages. So the sample itself, we started out with a little over 500 people at baseline. At the end of the intervention, we still had 414 people, so I think it was about 82% retention. And then at follow-up, we lost another 15.5%. So the sample that we did the analysis on was that follow-up sample of 335. And you can see that they were predominantly middle-aged females who'd been born in Mexico. Most of them were married. About half were obese, and about half were currently employed. So in terms of the actual success rates by BMI category, we had about 34% lost at least 2% of their baseline weight over between the beginning of the intervention and that follow-up 6 months later, lost and or had maintained that loss. And then about 14% had lost at least 5%. And you can see that it was most effective for the morbidly obese down then to the obese. You can see those trends there. So, our cost-effectiveness methods, in its simplest form, this is the equation for a cost-effectiveness ratio, and it's the difference in cost of two interventions over the quality-adjusted life years gained, or the differential between intervention one and intervention two. And intervention one can be the status quo. It can be doing nothing, or, you know, standard medical practice, depending upon what your analysis is on. And in this case, that's what it was. It was the cost of, it was the not getting the intervention, but if you got diabetes, getting standard care after that. Also, in that numerator, the costs are not just the cost to deliver the intervention itself, but recognizing that the health impact of those interventions may then impact healthcare costs down the road. It's also the differential in those medical costs between doing nothing and those individuals who got the intervention. And I do want to say, because we're in the process of publishing this paper and the question always comes up, research costs and costs related to fundraising and just general administration are not included in that numerator. It's just the cost to deliver the program. So methods that we used, we took the societal perspective. There are multiple perspectives you can take when doing a cost-effectiveness analysis. You can take the provider perspective, which is just the cost to the providers for an intervention. You can take a health system perspective, which includes the cost that insurers bear. Or you take the societal perspective, which is really recommended best practice. And that primarily, in addition to those all healthcare costs and the cost that it costs the organization that's delivering the program, it also includes the cost of the participant's time and any other costs that they bear to participate in the program. So cost-effectiveness studies that take the societal perspective tend to have larger costs than those that take a narrower perspective. We, as I mentioned earlier, the trials, the outcomes that we used were the portion of the sample that lost at least 2% and the portion of the sample that lost at least 5% weight over a 9 to 10 month period. And we used a commercial modeling program to predict those long-term healthcare cost differentials, as well as qualities gained from the intervention. And this was really nice because the modeling program that we use, you plug in the baseline demographic and physiologic information about your sample, and our sample is 335. It creates a simulated sample of 10,000 people, and then creates a matched control sample having the same demographics and physiologic information, and then it projects your change in outcomes over whatever time periods you set. And then we calculated the direct intervention cost manually and plugged those into the numerator to derive our cost-effectiveness ratios. Also, we took a 3% discount rate, projected outcomes to 5, 10, and 20 years, segmented our outcomes by weight class at baseline, and did a sensitivity analysis that projected longer-term weight loss using a validated formula by Wang and colleagues from 2012 that assumes that about 40% of the calories that from reduced sugar-sweetened beverage consumption are actually replaced by other forms of consumption, and that the majority of weight loss happens over a three-year period. So here are the intervention costs, and you'll notice from that the multiplier used that we had 335 people at follow-up, but we wanted to make sure that we accounted for the cost of people who participated for some portion of the program, even if they weren't available at measurement period. So this is a pretty conservative estimate of cost, and it was $846 per participant. Now, our results. For the 2% weight loss trial, you can see several things here. One, it becomes more cost effective over the longer the time period is, and that makes sense because the health benefits for losing weight or maintaining a healthy weight accrue over a longer period of time. We're all aware of that. Additionally, that dotted line at the $100,000 level is a number of studies have been done, and the rule now is that if you're taking the societal perspective, if your cost per quality adjusted life year gained is less than $100,000, it's cost effective. And so we can see that this was cost effective for the 2% weight loss group for the group as a whole, but that it was also most cost effective for our obese segment. And that actually even for the group that was not obese, which was normal weight and overweight combined, that it was cost effective at a 20-year period. For the 5% group, now you would think, so 5% weight loss is going to accrue better health benefits over the long term, but a smaller percentage achieved that outcome. We see that it actually becomes cost effective even at the 10-year period for that morbidly obese group. So they're seeing, you know, significant health benefits earlier. And then for everybody except for the overweight and normal weight group, that it actually also is cost effective over a 20-year period. So that was great to see. And then when we did the longer term projected weight loss from reductions or changes in sugar sweetened beverage consumption, it actually became even more cost effective. And the idea behind that is that people were continuing to lose some weight over that three-year period, which accrued more health benefits. The interesting thing is that projected weight loss, the reduction in cost, was actually driven more by our normal and overweight group than the obese and the morbidly obese. And it's some of the morbidly obese folks were projected to actually gain some or all of their weight back over the longer term period, and that's why. So this was a cost effectiveness study that analyzed a community-based intervention over approximately a 9 to 10 month period, weight loss, and we also projected longer term weight loss over a 3-year period. And the intervention itself was cost-effective given current decision rules, which was wonderful to see. And it was most cost-effective with using the actual weight loss for the obese and morbidly obese group. But it was interesting to see that even that 2% weight loss achieved, that it was cost-effective when you had normal weight and non-obese participants in the program. So in terms of, you know, what does this mean for us and for the field as a whole, this was a relatively low-intensity community-based program working with a pretty you know, a low SES group, that it's difficult to retain people generally. And it was cost effective, so that's great to see. So we know that relatively low intensity programs over a short period of time can be cost effective when delivered in the community. It was also a culturally relevant program that was based using community-based participatory methods. We do project that some weight will be gained back by the morbidly obese, so it may speak to needing to do more intense follow-up with that group. And that it's useful to help to keep people in your programs that are normal weight, to help them maintain that weight and not become overweight or obese, that actually does help cost effectiveness as well. So that is my presentation. We'll